Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help immensely. It is not given to us to know which act or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward an enduring good. What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding, adding to, adding more, continuing. We know that it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, second, or hundredth gale. One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. Soul on deck shines like gold in dark times. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, builds signal fires, causes proper matters to catch fire. To display the lantern of soul in shadowy times like these, to be fierce and to show mercy toward others, both are acts of immense bravery and greatest necessity. Struggling souls catch light from other souls who are fully lit and willing to show it. If you could help to calm the tumult, this is one of the strongest things you can do.
So on Tuesday, I spent the day chaplaining at Rhode Island Hospital once again. And right before I was supposed to leave for the day, one of my colleagues asked me to make one more visit. And she looked at me pleadingly, and she said, "You'll like him. He's a good guy. He has a lot of problems, but he has an amazing heart." And because I always say yes, I said yes. And before I went, I checked his chart. I wanted to see what brought him here, what he was ailing from. And the chart told me that he's an alcoholic. The chart read that he's a young man with addiction struggles. I wandered over to his room, and I knocked on the door, and I introduced myself. "I'm the chaplain," I said, and his eyes almost immediately just welled up with tears. And if I'm honest, the tears completely disarmed me, because I had a story in my head, one I hadn't realized I had in my head, but I didn't expect this incredibly tender-hearted young man with eyes full of tears to be who greeted me. His pain was so palpable that it made tears spring to my eyes, and I pushed them back down, wanting to be present to him. And all I could get out at first was, "You've been through it." And he nodded, and he affirmed the deep, deep pain he was holding. And so with a lot of love in my heart for this stranger, I could only think of one more question. "Will you tell me what the pain is?" And he knew that I wasn't asking about the physical pain. And now, crying openly, he told me his story, one of immense loss and challenge. And as I listened to him, what I kept seeing more and more was a heart that wanted to feel love, a heart that wanted to feel whole. And that's the level at which we connected. From that place, I could talk to him about anything, about faith, we could talk about his worth, and we could talk of a different future for him. And I've noticed a trend that when I look in the chart, I see a diagnosis. I see addiction, mental health challenges, and yes, I know there's some truth to those diagnoses. But underneath, there's often another deeper truth, and that's the truth of a broken heart. And I can't tell you how often I speak with a patient for a variety of medical maladies, and if you can look further back in their life, there's been a crisis, there's been a reason that they are where they are, that their heart has been broken so badly. And so it makes me wonder the question that Bethany was working on answering. What can love do, and what can love heal? Can we love each other fully into life, into health? Can we, in a non-codependent sort of way, help save each other? And as the news of the world feels harder to bear, as we too feel real palpable pain and loss, not solely for our personal lives, but that too at moments, but for a world which can feel like it's lost its way. That story of fear and loss can feel very pervasive. It can break our hearts. And more, my conclusion is that there's a lot in this world that doesn't make sense. And those are questions that we come together to struggle with, questions we don't have the answer to. Why we go to war again and again, why human greed and need seems to outweigh care for our planet. But this I know, the heart has resilience. All hearts, every heart, wants to give love and feel love. And I know we've spoken about this before, how to honor that tender place inside ourselves and to how to be real and present to what that pain is telling us. But today we're taking that one step further. Take one more deep breath and let it go. I want us to slow down. And when we do, we feel the hearts of others. I believe the hardest practice right now, and the most profound one in times of fear and crisis, is that of keeping an open and tender heart, of extending love outwards towards the stranger from a place not only of compassion, but of seeing the person underneath the story. This isn't a new practice, and it isn't one specific to our faith, but it is where we find ourselves right now. And I chose the reading that Martina just read so beautifully because that's what I believe to be true, that will answer every question ultimately from a place of love. We'll answer the questions, solve the problems, live differently when we can put down the story of the other and see the people underneath the story. When we love the being regardless of what the world is telling us about them. And I want to be clear, this is not about perfection. This is my practice too, and I fail at this multiple times a day, every day. It's not about getting it right. It's about starting it again and again. Because I invite you to think about what a heart broken open, not a broken heart, but a heart broken open might do. When the world breaks our heart, it overwhelms us. It drowns us in pain and fear and sorrow. But when our heart breaks open, we can help feel the pain of others and maybe help mend it by the presence of love. So our invitation then is into the truly radical act of loving in a time of terror. For the past several years, the Unitarian Universalist Association has held a 30 Days of Love campaign. It starts mid-January and it ends February 13th, and obviously it's meant to move us away from solely the idea of romantic love, that there's so much more love than that. And I plan to bring this to you, and there's a little glitch that the campaign isn't actually happening this year, but that's fine because we can run our own. And it's not happening because they don't want to run it, it's happening because the person that ran it just took another job. So the invitation, what we will do instead is each week I'm going to send you an email, and it's going to invite you into a way to move deeper into a heart broken open. But we start today. So a couple of invitations today. In the community room on the far side of this wall is a poster. And it's a poster of solidarity to Iranians near and far. And I invite you, there are pens on the sill on the far side. I invite you to write notes of solidarity. And I'm going to bring it to the Iranian Student Union at URI this week. But that's just one thing. Sorry, someone's distracting me rightfully. Jean, would you stand for a moment? There are Side with Love t-shirts that Jean and the Social Justice Committee have lovingly had prepared, and it even names this congregation on the back, and they are available for purchase from Jean during coffee hour. But this week, every day, when you encounter someone by phone, email, in person, or maybe it's even someone you're watching on TV and yelling at. I never do that. Actively send love to that person. Breathe, slow down, and send love. And I promise you, and this is a promise, that at the end of the week, your heart will feel different. It will feel more supple, more ready for what comes. And that person you extended love to, they have been changed, even if just a tiny bit, by your love for them. And beloveds, this is how we work to heal the world and ourselves. In the words of Eleanor Roosevelt, if human beings can be trained for cruelty and greed and a belief in power that comes through hate and fear and force, then certainly we can train equally well for greatness and mercy and power of love, which comes because of the strength of the good qualities that are found in the soul of every being. Love will guide us. So I invite you into a spirit of meditation. Lower your gaze, if you will, or close your eyes. And as you breathe in and breathe out, I invite you to send love not only to yourself, though that too, but for whoever pops into your mind. We'll be in silence together. As you slowly come back into the room, I invite you to rise in body or in spirit and join us in singing hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us.